The Bristol Bay Fisheries Report is brought to you by the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association, ensuring long-term growth in the world's greatest salmon fishery through investments in Bristol Bay science, infrastructure, marketing, and quality. The Bristol Bay RSDA, we are on board with you.
This is KDLG's Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. Coming up today, we'll check in with several fishermen about their 2013 season and take a look at things from the perspective of processors. We'll also get an update on how things are looking to the west in the Togiak District. All of that and more is coming up on today's Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. This is KDLG's Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. On Thursday, the effort to lighter the fuel off the sunken tender Lone Star finally got started. The vessel's been sitting in the mouth of the Agushik River since June 30th and has been leaking fuel since that time. Petty Officer Sean Eggert is a spokesman for the U.S. Coast Guard, which is one of the agencies on scene.
The lightering operations are underway. They are hoping to be wrapped up with those by tomorrow, and the vessel that was out in the Impala, that's the vessel that was out in Dutch Harbor, they should be on scene by tomorrow, and they hope to get started with salvage operations early next week.
It's unclear how much fuel's already been removed from the Lone Star. When it sank in the Agushik River on June 30th, it was reportedly holding over 13.7 thousand gallons of diesel fuel and hundreds of gallons of other petroleum products. The vessel was also holding about 35,000 pounds of sockeye. Eggert confirms that the Coast Guard has signed off on the plan that will be used to salvage the Lone Star.
For the most part, the salvage plan that's been presented has been approved. There are a few technical aspects of it that they're looking over, but everything about it so far seems pretty sound. I don't know the details of what's going to be done, and my understanding is that they're going to be using a couple of platforms that they'll put into place out around the area where the vessel is sitting at the bottom of the river, and then they'll be using those to stage equipment and get that boat up off the bottom of the river.
A light fuel sheen has been consistently seen coming from the Lone Star ever since it sank, and Eggert confirms that sheening is still occurring.
There has been a light sheen that's continued to come out of the Lone Star. So far, no wildlife or shoreline impact has happened, so that's good. But there has been a continued sheen throughout the operation.
The Coast Guard's presence in the response effort is made up of several members of the Pacific Strike Team that are on scene helping with both the lightering and the salvage operation. However, Eggert says the work is being closely followed by Coast Guard Sector Anchorage.
Anytime we've got a situation like this where, you know, not just the day-to-day affairs of people who rely on that waterway, but anytime we have a situation where wildlife or the environment can be affected, these are things that our command here is looking at every day. We get briefs every morning about what's going on. It's something they're paying a lot of attention to.
The fuel that's been leaking from the Lone Star forced the Alaska Department of Fish and Game to close the set net fishery in the Agushik section of the Nooshigak District until the Lone Star is salvaged. Fish and Game also instituted a large 6-mile closure around the vessel for the commercial drift net fishery. The sockeye run to the Agushik River has since dried up, but not before the escapement goal was exceeded by about 88,000 sockeye. There's no guarantee those fish would have been caught in the commercial fishery, but since it was closed, fishermen didn't even have the opportunity. The owner of the Lone Star is Barise Fisheries Incorporated, and the company is accepting claims for uncompensated damages. According to a published public notice, costs which may be compensated include damage to natural resources, damage to property, the loss of subsistence resources, and the loss of profits or earnings. The Meredith Management Group stresses that claims need to be submitted in writing for a specified amount, and they need to include all of the evidence supporting the damages. The group has published a couple of numbers for those impacted by the sinking of the Lone Star. To call for more information about claims, they are 1-800-981-1283 or 610-725-8286. The public notice that has been distributed around Dillingham and Manicotic also includes a mailing address for claims. The Meredith Management Group notes that any claims which are denied or not resolved in 90 days can then be submitted to the National Pollution Fund Center. You're listening to the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report on KDLG. This is KDLG's Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. I'm Mike Mason. All of the counted rivers in Bristol Bay have met or exceeded their escapement goals, except for the Togiak River. However, ADF&G Assistant Area Management Biologist Matt Jones believes the goal will be achieved in the next few days. He noted that Thursday was another good day for sockeye escapement to the Togiak River.
We had our third day in a row of daily escapement at 10,000. And that's real good news that helped catch us up where we want to be. And we know we have a lot of fish in river, and our escapement is all but officially in the bag. And so everything is looking good over there, and we're glad we could get people some extra fishing time this week as well.
On Thursday, Fish and Game extended commercial fishing in the Togiak River section of the Togiak District through 9 a.m. on Sunday. Most of the fishing effort in the district is in the Togiak River section. Through Thursday, sockeye escapement to the river was counted at over 112,000 fish. The escapement goal is 150,000. Travel time for sockeye between the district and the counting towers near the mouth of Togiak Lake is 7 to 10 days, which means that the goal will likely be met with the amount of fish already in the river. The somewhat exclusive status for the Togiak District ends Saturday morning at 9 a.m. when fishermen who have fished in other districts can freely go to the Togiak District to fish. Jones says since fishermen don't have to actually inform Fish and Game about going to Togiak, it's difficult to track the amount of fishing effort in the district.
It isn't long before some local folks that fish over there start to stop fishing right at the same time when some outside participation comes over, and we never really have a good idea how much participation is out there at this point when the transfer period waves.
At last report, there were only two processors buying sockeye out of the Togiak District. They are Togiak Seafoods in the village of Togiak and Togiak Fisheries, located across the bay from Togiak. Apparently, all of the outside processors stopped buying fish either last week or earlier this week. Jones says the most important factor fishermen headed to Togiak to fish should consider is the market for their catch.
I've had some people definitely inquire about going over there, and I basically tell folks that this week and last week are kind of on average the peak weeks of fishing, but this coming week, these next 2 weeks can still be reasonably good fishing. When you say those words, it can mean some different things in different districts. A reminder, it is a smaller run. The total run is not on the size of other districts, and keep that in mind. Is gas is expensive. I can't tell folks if it's going to be worth their while to go over there or not.
Through Thursday, commercial fishermen in the Togiak District have hauled in over 396,000 sockeye. That's just above the 390,000 fish harvest anticipated in the preseason forecast. Total run through Thursday, including harvest and escapement, is over 508,000 sockeye. The preseason forecast anticipated a total run of 590,000 fish. The Bristol Bay Fisheries Report will continue in a moment.
The Bristol Bay Fisheries Report is made possible in part by AIFMA, the Alaska Independent Fishermen's Marketing Association, 1-800-816-3741.
This is listener-supported public radio, KDLG. The EPA's Bristol Bay Watershed Assessment and the idea of utilizing a section of the Federal Clean Water Act to stop the proposed Pebble Mine came up during a U.S. Senate hearing on Tuesday. The hearing of the Environment and Public Works Committee was focused on the nominations of three people to fill high-level jobs within the EPA. Ken Kapokas has been nominated to serve as the assistant administrator for the Office of Water. It's the second time he's been nominated for the job, which is currently being filled on an interim basis. Kapokas is currently serving as a consultant to the EPA. During questioning, he was asked by Senator David Vitter from Louisiana how much the agency has spent developing the much-talked-about Bristol Bay Watershed Assessment.
Senator, my understanding is that the agency, through earlier this year, has spent approximately $2.4 million in external costs. I do not know of an estimate of internal costs to the agency.
The latest public comment period on the new draft version of the Bristol Bay Watershed Assessment wrapped up earlier this summer, and the agency hopes to have the document finalized by the end of the year. The assessment is intended to guide the agency's future decision-making about whether or not to allow large-scale mining projects to be developed in the Bristol Bay region. Senator Vitter asked Kapokas to explain the rationale for the assessment.
Well, approximately 3 years ago, the agency was petitioned by a number of residents and entities in Alaska to exercise its authority under 404 to stop a permit from being issued for a proposed pebble mine. The agency chose to not favorably respond to that petition, but instead decided to take up the assessment of which is currently underway. It was based in part upon the level of interest associated with that proposed mine, the size of the proposed mine, and the significance of the resources in the Bristol Bay watershed that could be affected.
The draft version of the watershed assessment basically outlines the possible impacts to the natural environment from allowing a massive mine to be developed in an area that is home to the largest sockeye salmon run on Earth. During Tuesday's hearing, Senator Vitter called the assessment unnecessary.
And we think it would be far more constructive for the EPA to do what's in the law, react to a specific permit application.
So far, the Pebble Limited Partnership has not yet filed for any permits under Section 404 of the Clean Water Act. The partnership has noted several times in recent months that they intend to make their mine plan public and file for permits before the end of the year. At the heart of the whole issue is the request from many stakeholders that the EPA step in and use an authority granted to it under the Clean Water Act to basically veto the issuance of 404 dredge and fill permits that would come from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. Some stakeholders want the agency to use its authority even before the formal permits are applied for by the Pebble Limited Partnership. During his comments about the nomination of Ken Kapokas, Senator Vitter claimed that he was already part of an effort to expand the agency's authority over the 404 permits.
As a senior policy advisor for the Office of Water, Mr. Kapokas is already part of a team that's currently engaged in what we all think is a troubling expansion of regulatory authority under Section 404 of the Clean Water Act. Any individual or business requiring a permit to dredge or fill wetlands under Section 404 must now worry, because of recent events, that EPA might preemptively veto a project even before a permit application is even submitted, or that the agency may suddenly revoke a Section 404 permit years after it has been issued. This is exactly the type of uncertainty that has been threatening and putting a halt on a broad spectrum of economic activity, particularly recently, including housing development, job-creating mining projects, and essential flood control.
Senate Republicans have so far been successful in blocking the confirmation of Ken Kapokas to be the assistant administrator of the EPA's Office of Water. The proposed pebble mine is expected to be the subject of a committee hearing Thursday in the U.S. House. The hearing of the Science, Space, and Technology Subcommittee on Oversight is titled the EPA's Bristol Bay Watershed Assessment, a factual review of a hypothetical scenario. You're listening to the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report on listener-supported public radio, KDLG. This is the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. I'm Mike Mason. The 2013 sockeye salmon season will go down as one for the record books. The run was the earliest on record, and the base price increased by 50%. Corey Arnold is a set netter at Graveyard Point near the mouth of the Quijack River. He says the season went pretty well.
It was looking to be an epic record season. We were luckily there early for free week. And as you know, we were suddenly shut down on July 4th. And so the season was stopped short abruptly. And that was pretty much it for us there.
Fishermen in the Naknek-Quijack District got pretty consistent fishing time up until July 4th. However, in an attempt to get sockeye counted as escapement to both the Naknek and Quijack rivers, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game halted commercial fishing pressure in the district for four straight days until July 10th, when the fleets were allowed back in the water. Arnold says he started fishing on June 17th during what is commonly called Free Week, and he believes they were in the water in time to catch much of the early run.
Usually we arrive fairly early, but not always ready to just start fishing immediately in the beginning of Free Week. But this year we happened to make it for the first tide, and it immediately paid off, over 1,000 pounds or so coming in on the first tide, and it just stayed consistent all the way through. So we were really fortunate to be there early. Maybe half the fishermen were there. Even by the end of Free Week, there's a lot of open space.
Another of the Quijack section set netters who was ready for the early run of sockeye this season was Harlan Bailey, who showed up on the 3rd of June.
Oh, I hit it good. That early run was a third of my catch this year. So I was fortunate enough to be here and to fish that every day.
This year's preseason forecast anticipated the run would come in at about 26.3 million fish. Actual run came in at about 23 million sockeye, about 3 million fish short of the preseason forecast. Bailey says despite the small forecast and actual run, he caught more fish than he expected. As far as the base price, Bailey says it turned out right about where he expected.
I had $1.50 in mind, to tell you the truth, but most of the time we don't get what I have in mind, so I was gratified to get the opening price that I had in mind. And moreover, I'd like to see, a little bit another boost after this, come winter or spring. Yeah. I'd like to see a little more. But the dollar and a half, this year is not the best catch I ever had. But this dollar and a half, as far as my gross income here, puts it up there pretty good.
While the Naknek-Quijack District posted the largest district harvest this season at just over 5 million sockeye, the Igigik District was not far behind with a harvest of over 4.8 million fish. One of the drifters who spent most of the season in the Igigik District was Joel Ludwig from Washington State. He regrets not being in the water a couple of days earlier.
I missed the 10th. In the 11th, that first week, and there was some fish caught that week, and so I might have missed out on 15,000 pounds by not being ready for those first 3 days.
For the last couple of years, fishermen in the Igigik District have had to sit for several days during the heart of the season as ADF&G tried to make the escapement goals. Ludwig says he and his fellow fishermen should be ready to stand down.
I think we got to just get used to fishing, and then all of a sudden you better get ready to sit 4 or 5 days. We did it last year, and God, a couple years ago I think we did the same thing in 2011. I think we sat 7 or 8 days. So just when you think you're in the heart of the season and you should be fishing, I guess we got to get used to sitting 3, 4, 5 days and let them get that big block of fish and then be ready to go. There's guys I know that yanked their boats out. They were done for the year. And some did put them back in, and some went home and probably missed out on some poundage.
Now that the 2013 season is for the most part over, many fishermen are turning their attention to next year. The 2014 preseason forecast should be out sometime in November, and there's a lot of optimism that Silver Bay Seafood's entry into the Bristol Bay market next year will be positive for fishermen. Ludwig suggests that Silver Bay's already changed the dynamic without even buying a fish.
They've already have stimulated what's going on market-wise. They're going to have a fisherman-owned company. I think it's pretty cool. And what a boon to the local economy. It's probably the biggest cash infusion this town's seen in quite some time, and I think they're going to have a very good fleet, and I think the product coming out of there is going to be outstanding. It's exciting.
Silver Bay Seafoods is busy building a 53,000-square-foot processing plant in Naknek with the goal of having that plant up and running in time to buy herring from the 2014 Togiak Sacro herring fishery. Silver Bay Seafoods anticipates that the new plant will have the capacity to process about 2.4 million pounds of product a day, and they intend to buy up to 18% of next year's drift net harvest. The early sockeye run to Bristol Bay this year coincided with the time frame in which drifters could move between the east side districts freely up until June 25th. Drifter Raz Catelico suggests that the drifters that were able to move around before the 25th had the ability to catch some early fish.
Unfortunately, we didn't get up here till late, but the guys that were up here early did really good the first few weeks because they went to different districts and did really well. They were really good fishermen did.
Catelico says he started fishing around June 19th and fished exclusively in the Naknek-Quijack district. He labeled fishing this year as hit or miss.
I mean, Igiak did good and Nujiak did good. Naknek was good on a couple days, but it was line fishing, and we got an opening on the west side, and it was really good that one day. Then after that, it was people were catching mostly dogs, and it slowed way down. But we sat on the beach from the 10th to the 15th, and we didn't fish, so that hurt us. But overall, the guys that fished early and worked the line did well, and the guys that stayed in Igiak and Nujiak and the guys who were in Gashik early did well, too, because there was fish down there early. And Igiak and Nujiak were the most productive places this year.
The Nushagak district featured the most consistent fishing time this season as fishing game tried to slow down the escapement to the Nushagak and Wood Rivers. The drifters were open continuously on July the 5th, but even before that, they were being given about 18 hours a day of fishing time. Set netters were opened up continuously on June 25th. Things were much tighter in the Igigik district as fishing game limited fishing time in early July in an effort to get more escapement to the Igigik River. In the end, all of the counted rivers in the Ugashik, Igigik, Naknek-Quijack, and Nushagak districts met or exceeded their escapement goals. The 2013 season summary from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game should be out sometime in September, and the forecast for the 2014 sockeye run should be ready for release sometime in November. The Bristol Bay Fisheries Report will continue in a moment. You're listening to KDLG's Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. The 2013 Bristol Bay sockeye salmon run is, for the most part, over. Base price has been set at $1.50 a pound. Total harvest will likely come in at just over 15.5 million sockeye. The next step is to process all the sockeye into the various product forms and then sell those products. Bristol Bay can be a challenging place to do business for the processors because of the remote location and the very short fishing season. Glenn Reed toured processing plants in Dillingham and Naknek earlier this month. He's the president of the Pacific Seafood Processors Association. Reed suggests that there is nothing about the Bristol Bay sockeye run that is truly predictable.
Not only from season to season, but within a season, from day to day, the day you think you've seen it all is the day you're about to be surprised. And it's filled with, I think, good characters, both on the water, on the harvesting side, and in every other part of the industry. Good people who gravitate toward that sort of dynamic environment are kind of fun people. They're ready for anything, and you have to be. And so I think it's one of the most unique and fascinating industries I've ever been exposed to, and I feel real fortunate to be working in it.
The processing sector in Bristol Bay is wide and varied and spread out from Igigik to Togiak, with the vast majority of the processing power in the bay based in the Naknek area. Vince O'Shea is a vice president with the Pacific Seafood Processors Association, which is a trade organization that includes the processors like AGS, North Pacific, Peter Pan, and Trident Seafoods.
You can take the best fisherman in the world in Alaska, and he can have his best day. He and his crew can have his best day. And if that boat shows up to the dock and there's nobody there to buy the fish, it's not a sustainable business operation at all. We went through a plant this morning, and if you could see the quality of the fillets that were coming off that line, vacuum-packed, frozen, trimmed up, and you realize what went into getting those fish out of the water to the dock, the care that went into them, and the quality that was being pushed through that plant, which benefits everybody. I mean, it benefits the harvesters, it benefits plant workers, it benefits the community. And I think it does says a real significant statement to the quality of Alaska seafood and the brand of Alaska seafood. And I think that's really feeding people is a very gratifying business to be in. And to me, it's tremendously attractive to do that.
The various processing companies that operate in Bristol Bay have their own individual marketing campaigns, and many of the processors work alongside the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, which is basically the seafood marketing arm of the state of Alaska. However, ASME is limited to marketing Alaska's salmon resource as a whole, and they can't specifically market salmon from one particular region of the state, Bristol Bay, for instance. That's changing thanks to the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association, which is made up of all the DriftNet permit holders in the bay. The RSDA recently hired a veteran seafood marketer to work on marketing Bristol Bay sockeye. Her name is Beth Poole, and she got started on the first of the month. Poole admits that her challenge is to inform wholesalers, retailers, and consumers about the bay's one-of-a-kind sockeye resource.
There's awareness levels across the board. Some people don't know the difference between wild versus farmed, and that's an education point. And then people don't necessarily know about Alaska region, so some of the things that these marketing programs can do is go directly to the consumer where they're buying their salmon, whether at the restaurant or at the retailer, and show them that point of origin, where their fish is coming from, tell a little bit about the region, the fishermen, and sustainability practices so that they can make educated choices about their seafood.
This year, the Board of Directors for the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association provided several thousand dollars in funding for specific marketing efforts. For instance, $40,000 is going to the nonprofit group Chefs Collaborative to promote awareness of Bristol Bay sockeye. Poole says one of the best ways to promote the bay's sockeye is to tell the story of who harvests the fish and where they're harvested.
I think telling the story is absolutely vital for people to understand where their seafood's coming from. If they know the fishermen or just the fishery, what the lifestyle's like, it helps them get a picture of where their fish is coming from, and it helps them get a picture of all the work that commercial fishermen do to harvest this incredible resource and bring it to them across the country and across the globe. So knowing the region, the information about the point of origin is really important.
The BBRSDA project, in partnership with the Chefs Collaborative to show off Bristol Bay sockeye, is called Savor Bristol Bay, and Poole confirms that events are being held at over 80 restaurants across the nation.
There's a big range of the way that restaurants can take it, depending on how far that they want to jump in. Some are having dinner and movie screenings featuring the documentary Red Gold. Some are having tasting menus featuring Bristol Bay salmon and local produce, and some are having month-long specials on their menu featuring Bristol Bay sockeye. The real goal is to raise awareness about Bristol Bay sockeye specifically, as well as some of the parts around Pebble Mine, and raising awareness about the threats that are out there and getting support and people educated about some of the things that are happening in the bay.
Beth Poole came to the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association after serving as the executive director of the Copper River Prince William Sound Marketing Association. She started work as the new marketing coordinator for the BBRSDA on the 1st of July. That concludes today's edition of the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. The report can be found online at kdlg.org, and the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report can be heard at Straight Up 4 p.m. each Friday, Saturday, and Sunday during the months of June and July. If you have something to add to the report, including corrections or news tips, send me an email to mike@kdlg.org. You can also call 842-5281. Until next time, please be safe, watch the weather, and stay tuned to KDLG Public Radio.
The Bristol Bay Fisheries Report is brought to you by the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association. ensuring long-term growth in the world's greatest salmon fishery through investments in Bristol Bay science, infrastructure, marketing, and quality. The Bristol Bay RSDA, we are on board with you.